We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. Check out the Geek Nation Tours New York Comic Con package, combining all the excitement of the convention with a tour of the city and the coolest sights for the superhero fan. You'll recognize locations from films and books and visit geek culture sites like Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
Saturday morning, bright and early here. I'd like to welcome to our table Brett Monarch.
Yo.
Alexander, who is Curtis Weaver, unfortunately, couldn't make it, so Alexander is jumping in from his place. Thank you for coming. As well as Marcus and Marcus Stowe. And we are here to We Talk Comics live at Lexington.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. All right. First of all, thank you for coming out.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Basically, We Talk Comics, if any of you haven't heard it, we do a podcast sort of weekly, and we just like to talk about all things comics, all things, you know, well, really all things randomly that come up to us. So today we're very fortunate to be joined by Alexander Finbow, Renegade Arts and Entertainment.
Good morning. Most of my time is spent running the publishing side of Renegade Arts Entertainment, which I think is now Alberta's only comic book publisher. I think Red 5 have kind of faded away. We might be all that's left.
Wow.
We're also Canada's fastest growing graphic novel and comic book publisher. Hooray.
Yay. Yeah, it's exciting news.
I totally recommend checking out their work. It's good.
And I'm a writer as well, and I also have a background in film and TV, which I still work in. And I'm really bad at being rude about people on panels, so I apologize if anybody is offended.
We're Canadian here. It's just the natural order of things, I guess, right? Isn't it?
That's right. There's going to be a lot of apologizing going on.
I'm sorry.
No, I am. All right, Marcus Toe, tell us about your work.
I'm a penciler inker. I've worked on a lot of titles for Marvel and DC, such as Red Robin, New Warriors. I'm currently working on a book with Boom, funny enough that we talk about Boom, called Hacktivist, and it's basically co-written and produced kind of by the actress Alyssa Milano, which is out in the stands now. In fact, I think issue 3 came out this past Wednesday. If I'm not mistaken. So, yeah.
I read it.
Yeah? Well, hopefully it was good. I've been really enjoying the project, and I do a bunch of random other things, like, other book publishing stuff. I'm working on a book with Scholastic right now, which is a biography on Wonder Woman, because, you know, she's real. So. And
it will be soon enough.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly, so. Maybe I get to be introduced to Gal Gadot if all my stars align perfectly.
Well, that actually leads me into my first real question for you, is have you met Alyssa Milano?
I have, actually. And you know what's interesting, working with actresses or actors, you always worry that they're going to be super micromanaging, but she isn't. She's like, I don't know really a whole lot about art. We went through a fine-tooth comb with the script, and as long as he can handle that, I leave it to you. And I was like, perfect. That's exactly how I like to work. No one bothers me.
That's great.
It's easier to go through deadlines that way, though, for sure.
Right.
All right, Chris.
I'm Chris, co-host of We Talk Comics. And I want to know what you get... Outside of your own work and your own company, what excites you about the comics coming out today? Is there a book that is phenomenal in your regard?
Yeah,
outside of his own work. We're not Robert Crumb sort of playing with ourselves to our own art. No. Most comic book guys are comic book geeks, and that's why we love you.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
that and the amazing artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And the occasional movie.
We're spoiled at the moment, I think, in terms of the quality of comics that's coming out. I mean, I have friends that I've grown up with that still will not pick up a comic or a graphic novel because they feel it's beneath them. They can read words, so why do they need pictures to help them? And I always say, look, it's like a movie or a TV show. There's something for everybody. You just need to find the story in the genre you like and treat comics as a medium, and then you will fall in love with it because it will be quicker, you'll have the same emotional response as you do to any other kind of media, but then you'll have the rest of your evening free to do something else, like maybe talk to your family for a change.
Like, you don't have to like sit through a 3.5-hour movie and hate it at the end of it.
Are you thinking of any in particular?
Well, I mean, I could name a couple, but let's not do that.
Okay.
That'll be later.
Yeah.
Recently, what have I read? I'm still enjoying Sex Criminals.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's funny. And it's nice how they can touch on some things that nobody else has gone near in comics.
Have you ever had a chance to meet Chip Zdarsky?
Yeah.
He's an interesting cat, that guy.
Yeah, he's good fun.
Yeah, that's the only way to put it, actually.
Yeah. I'm from Toronto, so like he's from Toronto too. And I think last year's Fan Expo, just to be because a jerk about things, he put a table with a banner that said Zdarsky Con right outside the doors of Fan Expo.
I saw a photo of that.
Just to sell his own comics. And he's sitting there in a suit, and he just like just sits there. And if you ever go online and try to look for this, there's a great picture of him dressed up as in a Garfield onesie, which is pretty good.
Well, he also ran for Toronto mayor.
Yeah, he ran for Toronto mayor.
But that was before his comic book time. Really interesting character.
Yeah. He worked for the National Post. Yeah? He worked for the National Post too.
Yeah, he worked for the National Post, yeah. And I mean, he's from the National Post to Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
In what, 3 years? That is a bit. Plus, he has a book called Sex Criminals.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is good. And Sex Criminals came out at the same time as another book called Sex, I seem to remember. And I picked up both of them. I don't know why. It's good to be diverse in your choices. And Sex was just awful, in my opinion. Apologies to anyone who's a fan of it. Anybody read it?
We can
be honest. I read the first 6 issues before I ditched it, in disgust.
We reviewed the first issue, and I think that it. I don't think it did very well in our reviews either. So
the only thing interesting about that book was I think Comicology banned it for about a week.
Okay, I thought the art was okay, but the story writing was everything was wrong.
Well, it did suffer by comparison because it did come out so close to Sex Criminals.
Well, the only similarity between those two books is the title. Like one of them is a misogynistic, like, thug fest with bad writing, bad plotting, and somebody ranting at the end of it in his own letters column. And the other one is a well-thought-out, touching, sensitive coming-of-age drama that just happens to have some weird sex in it. Yeah, Sex Criminals is great. You got any 13-year-old daughters or sons, give them that. And they will be like, this is great. I understand the world a lot better and myself.
You don't need to argue about what kind of classes are taught in school. Just give them the comic book, right?
Yeah. And then wait for the sniggering to start.
Yeah.
Saga. I'm still enjoying Saga. Yeah. I know a lot of people have dropped it that I've spoken to, but I still think the writing and the art is great.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of the opposite, unfortunately. After a few years ago, I just kind of stopped reading a lot of comic books. I felt like I was so inundated with, because I'm, you know, working in the industry sometimes, it's really just hard to kind of like, you know, bring that all home. So I've actually watched, I'm really being into anime right now. Which is comic book. Well, manga is comic book.
No, that brings up an interesting point for me.
Uh-huh.
Now, I am also a manga or a manga fan.
Yeah.
And I can't even bring it up on the podcast because I usually have 3 or 4 other people sitting with me where it is this separate thing.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't have to
I don't quite understand. I mean, the language of the storytelling is different.
Yep.
It supposedly is different. But there's this line in the geek community that you can like one or the other, and there's very little crossover. Although I have to say, I find it harder to choose a manga title than I do a comic book. I can read any comic book. I love bad comic books.
Yeah, yeah.
But bad manga, I can't suffer through.
Yeah, I can't really do a lot of bad manga. The one book that I try to read, and it's super popular nowadays, is Attack on Titan. And I really didn't like it. But though, I mean, everyone tells me the show is better, but whatever. But actually, like, those that don't like manga, I usually hand them an issue of, or a volume of Vagabond, which is amazing. The story, like, it's beautiful. It's the story of Miyamoto Musashi, which is a very, like, famous swordsman in Japan. It's like a made-up biopic type of story, but the artwork's phenomenal. And it's like, though it's like super long, it's like 36 volumes or something like that, but it's like beautiful. The artwork's amazing, and I always give that as a kind of a testament to what it could be. Though it's the story itself is more of a poetic type of storytelling, so there's a lot of like nature and stuff like that. And the story is about the swordsman figuring out how to be a swordsman. So it's a lot of like looking at water and looking at, but the way it's all drawn, it's just beautiful. I think it's amazing. But I also like watching really dumb things too, which we all do, right? But I'm really into sports anime these days, which is a big thing. And like Haikyuu is great as well. Eyeshield 21 is my favorite manga, but I don't like the cartoon. Stuff like that.
Have you read Hikaru no Go? It's not a sports manga.
No.
But it's a manga about Go.
Yeah?
The game. And I'm absolutely obsessed with it. Yet I don't know how to play this chess-like game it looks like Othello to me. It's amazing how compelling that manga storytelling is.
There's manga about people drawing manga. Like, that's Bakuman. A story. Yeah,
same artist as Hooker. Very good.
Yeah, series. It's really good.
I love
good.
That
yeah.
series.
So it's just a weird kind of thing, but it's like, it's enjoyable because I feel like when I read that stuff, it's nothing's earth-shattering. Like, nothing, it's just like everyday life stuff, and they do it so well, and I don't need to read, like, Galactus is coming to destroy the world, so that's what are we going to do next? Which I still love that stuff, but sometimes I just need something so plain and normal, but then your everyday life is very, like, what's it like?
Slice of life.
Yeah, slice of life, but also, like, you know, with the sports anime, it's like, oh, I'm graduating this at the end of the year, so we have to win the championship, right? But I've loved that stuff ever since I was a kid anyways, like Mighty Ducks and stuff like that. And all those sports movies, I love that stuff. So it just goes to, like, to what I always like.
Now, I'm always curious, as an artist, are you attracted, when you're also being a reader, can you read a book with bad art but good writing?
Yes. But, like, how bad are we talking about? Like,
we're not questioning that, probably.
Because I don't want to, like, name names, but I mean, like, I've read some things where, but it's tough because...
You can name names afterwards.
Yeah. It's tough because, I mean, like I said, if there's really good writing and you're kind of like, what's it called, invested in the story, the art sometimes just has to be serviceable to be okay.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, I can also still enjoy a great book, like a book with great art, and never read anything about it. So.
Yeah, it's a different experience.
It is a different experience, yeah. I guess that works with, I mean, if you ever buy books from another country, like French graphic novels or, you know, like books from China or Japan that like are in Japanese, sometimes you can just enjoy, like I have some Korean books where I'm like, I have no idea what they're saying, but the art's beautiful, right?
Yeah, yeah, it becomes like an art book experience.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a bit like working in movies and TV, I always try and tell the production teams that, yeah, it doesn't matter how beautiful what we're doing looks, but if the sound is terrible, everyone will think it looks bad. And it feels the same way with comics, that if the writing's bad, no matter how beautiful the art is, you've lost them at the story level.
Yeah.
And then just looking at an art book after that.
But that's the way I find with comic books in general too, because I mean, it kind of all have to play together, because the second you take the reader out of like the imaginary world that you're creating, then you're already kind of lost them, right?
Yeah.
And same thing with movies. Sometimes you're all it takes is one thing that you're like, I don't believe that they ever did that, and then that's it. You're gone, right?
Yeah.
So.
God damn it.
This is your earlier 3.5 hour long movie that you didn't like.
Well, what was the movie I was thinking about? I mean, maybe it wasn't three. Well, Hobbit. Well, at least Hobbit. I'm kind of a big
Lord. 3.5 hours right now, I think.
Well, I love all Lord of the Rings stuff, so all I wanted out of that movie was just to see more. I didn't really care what it was, so I mean, I went in there kind of not really caring what they were doing with it, but that's my fault. I'm doing it. I can't remember. I mean, maybe because we talk about this a lot at our studio, but Man of Steel was one of those ones where I didn't mind the movie that much, but the little things that you were kind of like, no, I don't think so, you know?
What comes to mind?
When Jonathan Kent... Oh, well, spoilers if anyone... when Jonathan Kent dies in the tornado, and then he just like stood there and like, nuh-uh. And then he just let the tornado go. And I was just like, he's Superman. He could just go quick and no one would see him. Yeah. Like, I just feel like his lazy storytelling. I don't mind that he died. I liked that in the Christopher Reeve one, when he died, was that he died of a heart attack and Superman couldn't do anything about it. And that's like the theme of the whole story afterwards, that sometimes he just is incapable of doing, like, saving someone, right? As opposed to, say, when he flies backwards around the world to spin the world, go back in time. So for some odd reason, he couldn't reach the missiles in time, but yet he can spin around the world backwards fast enough to go, like
don't think about it.
Yeah, right? Like that takes me out of the movie, so then I'm just like, okay.
And I think you hit the nail on the head with the Jonathan Clark moment, because that's a defining moment for Superman.
Yeah.
It sort of says he's powerless, and in the Man of Steel movie, of course, he isn't powerless, he just decides... I have to keep this secret. That's a completely different rationale. Yeah.
I think that like stories in general are based, should always be based like that. Like Superman is kind of an interesting character because he could do everything, but then that in turn is kind of like a story you can go with. Like a lot of us know what it feels like to be, you know, think that we can do anything in our lives, and then the second that something happens that we are completely powerless about, it kind of brings us down to earth and makes us realize that, you know what, You know, life is precious and all that kind of stuff. But and then people seem to miss that with Superman, I find a lot of times, is that he's too powerful. But yeah, there's a lot of things he can't do. So why don't we play off that kind of theme? But I mean, it's, who's to say, I'm not like a writer or nothing like that, or I don't run DC Comics. So
no, but I mean, you are a storyteller. I mean, you can't do what you do without having some sense of narrative.
You'd be surprised.
I'm just going to be, every time I'm in a movie now and something just pulls me out, I'm just going to imagine you standing up and go, nope, I'm done. I'm out of here.
Just tip over the table. Just
storming out the cinema.
Throw popcorn in the air. Just, ugh.
All right, since we're talking a little bit about the movies here, I've been absolutely obsessed over the last couple of months with licensed comic books. Mm-hmm. It seems in the last couple of years, the quality of licensed comic books has gone up exponentially. And I was famous for this. I'd go on rants that, why do we get these properties and then they suck when it comes to the comic book medium? But with Sons of Anarchy and 24, and there are so many good licensed books out there. Do you guys have any opinions on that?
I don't know. I 3 years ago, I wasn't buying many comics anymore. And I was busy, like, being an important businessman and writing my own stuff. And then suddenly I was going to all these comic stores and meeting comic book store owners all the time. And then I was picking up comics and people were recommending them. Now I have a stupid pull list. I think I've got like 14 on there. And every time I go in a store, I come out with a different comic or two. And some of them are licensed properties. And especially the Star Wars ones recently, which have been like, wow, these have got so much better than they were.
I think, and it's funny you should say Sons of Anarchy, because I'm friends with Ed Brisson, who has written a bunch of the Sons of Anarchy.
This was 24, I have to...
and he did that too. And I think, and speaking with him, because he's a very professional writer, he writes... I love talking to him because, I mean, he's a big fan, yes, but he takes his craft very professionally. He intakes the the material, and he kind of like assesses what it's, you know, what the theme is and stuff like that. He really thinks about it as opposed to imposing his style onto, you know, a licensed project. Whenever you work in licensing, I feel like you kind of have to let it go, that artistic freedom in a weird way, and you just have to do what is kind of like done before because that's what they expect. And I think when you hire the right people for the right job, that ends up being, you know, that coming into play. Where maybe back before, like I'm just speculating because I never read licensed stuff except for when I was a kid, like Ghostbusters and stuff like that. But who knows if they were good? I don't remember. They probably weren't.
They
weren't,
but
yeah, they weren't. Yeah, so I'm probably sure they weren't. But it like a lot of times. Like, I find that this day and age, there's so much crossover with different people, with different jobs and different writing experiences that, like, a lot of these guys have done stuff for TV and movie and film, just like yourself. You've done a lot of things, and you're bringing that into comics, and I think that a lot of writers are like that as well.
So. Yeah. I remember when we started Renegade, Alan Grant, the writer, was one of the founding members, and he said, as far as his writing is concerned, he's one of those guys that you put him in a world where the rules are established and the characters are there, like licensed properties, then he knows what he's doing straight away. He hits the ground and he knows how to guide those characters and hit the beat points and everything that a reader needs to make it satisfying. But when he starts with a blank page, and it's up to him to create something from scratch, then he has to really work hard and he's struggling. Mm-hmm. So maybe licensed properties are better suited to a certain particular type of writer, and those writers are actually getting those gigs now rather than just the hottest writer at the time is being given them.
Well, and also, is there less of a stigma attached to writing licensed comics now than there was, say, 20 years ago? Because I think 20 years ago it was probably like just a starting out writer, they would just foist a licensed comic on.
Oh, they were all written by Buzz Dixon.
Yeah.
Every last one of them.
Sounds like a fake name.
Actually, it's not. I actually thought it was Chuck Dixon's stage name for when he was... No, turns out Buzz Dixon was a television writer that sort of got sloughed off into comic books. But...
That's it. Well, I know. I guess... I lost my train of thought for a second. Anyway, go on.
Buzz Dixon, but is the stigma?
Oh, stigma.
The stigma there, like not there anymore. So like anybody now can write.
I think from my experience talking with other creators, because nowadays you kind of have to write and do so many different things to make a proper paycheck. That you're just like, you know what? I'm doing what I want to do on one side, and then I'm taking on other side jobs. To kind of like, I don't know, put my kid through college or something like that. I know a lot of people that are like that. They're like writing things because like my kid's got to go to school or whatever. My kid needs to get braces, and there's no stigma because we all know how difficult it is to make it in comics, to make a living, and hey, a job's a job sometimes, and you do the best you can, and you enjoy it, you know.
Yeah, I feel the same way about reality TV as well when those jobs come calling.
You get paid and you're like, well, I'll do it. And it's not my love, but I'll do a good job. And you be a professional about it.
Yeah.
So.
That's great. Licensed comics are the reality TV. The comic world is.
Well, it's not particularly at least on my side to draw. I don't find it fun to draw because I'm not really good at like likenesses. In fact, I got fired off a job because I couldn't do the likenesses good enough. I was like, oh, okay.
Which one?
I did, for the Flash TV show, I did a few pieces for their, they had like a weekly one-page comic that they had online, and I don't know why they chose to do this.
It was one page? I thought it was 11 page.
Well, they, like, there's 11 pages as a standalone story, almost like a pre-Flash one,
okay.
But for some odd reason, they still wanted like comic book, like a comic page laying out like a scene in the TV show, so they give me clips of the show that, like, just a random clip, and I'd have to draw that sequence in one page, and I don't even know what they're gonna do with it. I'm like, it's already on the show. Why do you need a drawn thing like this? But I'm like, I don't ask those questions anymore because there's no answer. And then I got fired off of that because they're like, my editor is really nice though. He's really apologetic. I'm like, no, don't worry about it. It wasn't
Well, but I mean, on Flash Season 0, they have cycled through more than a few artists.
Oh, yeah. No, that one is because they have to do like a weekly 11-page book. And really, you can't... Unless if you got a team of like minions working with you, you can't do it. So, but mine was specifically something different, and I still don't know what they did with it. So,
It actually kind of drives me crazy to on those comics to see the likenesses that people are drawing, because it's like I know they're supposed to look like that, but I really just want them to look more comic booky and less like an actual person.
Actually, my favorite of that is actually Time Cop. If anyone ever remembers, the book came out after the movie.
That was like a 2-issue miniseries from Dark Horse.
It was a 3-issue miniseries. The book came out after the movie, but it was based on the comic book. Yet some artists went in and drew Jean-Claude Van's likenesses over top of the original story because it was based off the comic book that was never published. It was licensed after it was finished. And then they had to go in and change the likenesses. Sounds like an absolutely bizarre thing for to me. Nowadays, I mean, you base something off that you don't have to like match it. You don't see Kick-Ass look like he does in the comic book or anything. There was no changes to Wanted or anything, but I don't know. I just thought it was bizarre that I felt sorry for that poor artist who had to go in and try to match.
Some of the jobs you get in this industry are kind of weird too. Like it's like that stuff. Like sometimes you're like, oh, here's this random thing to draw. Do it by tomorrow, and you're like, okay.
What licensed property would you draw?
Would I draw?
Yeah, like something you're a fan.
Lord of the Rings would be pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, it'd be fun to kind of do a lot of that kind of stuff. A Lord of the Rings comic book, I think, would be phenomenal.
I'm surprised they don't have one.
Yeah, I was just thinking, did I miss
one? Do you guys remember when they did in Wizard a long time ago? Obviously, when the Wizard did like, oh, here's what we would do to like, here's the guys that we would get to match with.
Oh
like,
yes,
that was really cool.
The fantasy lineup.
Yeah, where they. Like, Joe Madureira on Ninja Turtles or something like that, and they had like Jay Scott on.
And Bart Sears was in every second issue.
But I mean, that's really cool. I mean, I would have loved to have seen that kind of thing, but I don't think they could ever get Joe Madureira to finish more than 2 issues of a book.
Now, in your imagination, would it be an expanded universe for Lord of the Rings?
I think it could be either or. I think it would be kind of cool to see like an actual like what the Tolkien books be like. Even if you just started with The Hobbit and kind of moved your way on, that would have been like years worth of material as a standalone. But and then you can like because there's so many appendices with the novels, right? So you can totally make stories out of that. I mean, this is like Star Wars, right? Right? So, there's so many stories in Star Wars that you could probably do from the novels and stuff like that.
Disney needs to buy Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. But they got money, right? They're making tons. Just buy it.
Now, we were talking about licensed books. Is Star Wars still a licensed book now that Disney owns it?
That's a good
now
question.
That Marvel is owned by Disney as well. Does that count? Do they have more freedom, do you think?
They probably have less freedom.
Yeah. No. There must be more lawyers looking at every stage now. With everything.
But the royalties on that, I was like, maybe I'll like suck it up just to do it. But like a lot of the guys think they got them, and apparently they were like huge Star Wars fans anyway, so I mean, that was probably like a dream job to be able to do that. Yeah. I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, but...
I'm a big Star Wars geek.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't... If someone came to me and said, yeah, we want you to write a Star Wars story, I would say no.
Yeah.
I don't think sometimes the things that you're the biggest fan of are the things you should go near.
That's a good point.
It's so many times you go behind the curtain and you're part of that creative process and it just kills it for you as a fan.
Yeah.
So I'd go and do something I didn't really care about, like Star Trek or something.
Hey, I'm a big Star Trek fan personally, so...
Hey, excellent. I'll write
something. We'll switch
yeah, it over around.
Yeah, I'll do Star Wars, he does Star Trek.
And it'll be a great story. I'll do you a kick-ass Star Trek story.
Sounds good.
Yeah. By the way, just because we're talking licenses and crossovers also usually suck, but I'm really enjoying the Star Trek Green Lantern limited series right now.
At least that one kind of makes sense. They're in space. You'd think they'd meet up in some dimensional rift or something.
Yeah, it probably makes a little more sense than Star Trek Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. Star Trek X-Men was a thing when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they'll eventually get Star Trek everything.
God,
I will ask,
actually.
I missed
out on so many things. Like, growing up in England, I read 2000 AD and, like, action and battle, and occasionally a Batman comic would come away. The stuff you guys are talking about sounds like some weird alternate universe.
We had a lot of weird stuff, man. We had a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, but Beano is almost impossible to get here.
Is it?
Yeah. We can get the annuals once a year.
Oh, wow. It's digital now. Digital
annuals. Oh, yeah. But you have to subscribe to get it on the app.
Yeah.
Which is expensive.
How much are they charging? Like,
I think it's $29 a year or something.
Oh, $29 a year?
That's
not expensive. That's a coffee at Starbucks.
Yeah, I'm not that big of a... I'd like to read Beano.
Somebody do the math on that. $29 a year. How many snacks a day is it?
I don't remember the rates.
That's about two something. No, not a day. Two something a month.
I love that people are actually trying.
Okay, this is good. So, you're telling me you're that cheap? You have about $2 a month to read something you want to read?
So, I'm going to ask, we only have a few minutes left. Is there any questions from the audience for any of these schmucks? Apparently not. All right, we're just
get as personal as you want.
that's right. All right. So,
favorite color?
You said personal.
Personal. That's too personal. You've crossed the line. I'm out of here. I'm done. You pulled me out of this panel.
All right. Tell us the most personally funny, weirdest story of being in the comic book industry.
Oh man, I don't know.
Yeah. So when you think of lawyers.
Some of them are, like, kind of not good to tell, though. Because, I mean, like, it has to do with, like, some serious crap, which just sucks. I always like a good fight, though. I mean, I always like seeing a good fight. But, I mean, comic people and fighting, that's more entertaining than, like, dangerous. It's more funny. Shoot. Yeah, you gotta ask me that earlier. There's too many things to run through my head as to whether or not it's appropriate to talk about.
Did you... I'll just throw a question, changing the subject a little bit. Did you know who Batwing was before you drew him?
Before? Well, I... kind of. Not really. I mean, it was a Coley Hamner... It was a Coley Hamner created character that showed up in Batman Inc. or something.
Was Grant Batman Inc.
Well, maybe Coley Hamner designed him, but it was a Grant Morrison... Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Morrison has all these random characters that you just... When we did, like, Multiversity and they're describing, like, all these things, I'm like, who are these people? They're like, oh, Grant Morrison came up with them. It's like, can I see a design? It's like, well, we don't have that yet. And then some of the designs they gave us, Grant Morrison drew what he looks like. I'm like, I don't know what that is. So that's, like, that's kind of his thing, but that's cool.
Yeah, tell us more Grant Morrison
stories. Okay. I have a really good one, but I can't tell you guys. I can't tell you guys. It has to deal with a lot of drugs, a plane, and pooping. So just put
fairly safe. I believe he's told that one.
Have
on
you told that
podcasts.
One?
Yeah.
I don't want to be the guy to
no, no, no. We don't want out anybody.
But that's all I heard.
That's
that
beers
from,
after the show.
I went to a UK show and they were telling that show. I went to like Cardiff and then they were telling that story the whole night. And I'm like, oh my god. So it's not my story to tell, really, because it's not me, right? Well, if it was me, then maybe I wouldn't tell a pooping story.
How about you, Alex? Do you have any pooping stories?
I'm trying to think of it. No, I'm going to be really careful because when I start talking about these things, then I realize I've just said stuff I really should not
we'll
have
we'll
said.
We'll share a beer at the Westin later. So if anyone wants to join us at the Westin.
buy us a beer. And then we'll
take
the bad stories or the funny stories, depending on who you are in the story. Yeah. There's some funny stories, especially after some of the shows.
There's also a lot of like really not like appropriate stories too that people do.
Ooh. Yeah, those stories should probably be out there.
You're right.
Name and shame.
We'll never get a job again in comics.
Well, yeah. If they get in prison, maybe.
Maybe.
All right. Well, let's see now. Since we're going to be wrapping it up in a moment here,
my favorite color is red.
Excellent. All right. Very good. Do you have anything else that you want to plug before we leave?
Yeah, come and see us.
Oh, question. We have a question. All right.
Favorite implants.
You don't want my favorite?
I'm a big fan of Stuart Amon in these days. Like, he's phenomenal. He makes everything look easy to draw. And it's not. It's totally not. And he has so many different styles, and he's like a super nice guy. Though a little bit quiet. It's hard to converse with him.
He is Canadian.
He's from Toronto. I actually met him at Calgary Expo a few years back, and him and his wife are just grade A people. They're really awesome. So it's good when a creator is as good of a person as they are like an artist. So.
And it's true, because it's funny, because he worked on Next Wave Agents of Hate with Warren Ellis. And I have met Warren Ellis more times than Stuart Immonen has met Warren Ellis at the time, which was kind of funny.
Wow. I just finished reading Habibi again, second time through. And that's just that book. I don't know if you guys... anyone read it? It's huge, and the depth is in there, and the clever way that story is done from story and art point of view, like Craig Thompson. It's amazing writing and drawing.
And this is the reason I can't afford Beano. I have to buy these books you guys recommend.
Because it's like Vagabond.
It's hardcover. I think it's like $45.
Yeah,
but it's well worth it. It breaks your arms reading that book.
Yeah. Oh, I'll check it out. I'll check it out.
Thank you.
Guys. Thank you so much.
All right, yes. Thank you very much for coming. We totally appreciate it. Listen to We Talk Comics on WeTalkPodcast.com. Check out Renegade Arts Entertainment. Check out The Hacktivist. And
WeTalkComics.com. Oh, sorry. WeTalkPodcast.com. I forgot the name right. We're available on iTunes. Check out our recent interviews with Dan Jurgens. And a whole bunch of other great comic book crafts. You can also follow us on Twitter at WeTalkPodcast.com.
Well, just WeTalkPodcast, that's okay. But anyways, enjoy the rest of the Edmonton Expo. Thank you for coming.
Okay.
Thanks to you two.
Thank you again, Brent, Chris, and your guest, Alexander Marcus.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.